Hello and welcome to People in Profit. I'm Charles Pellegrin. And this week, we set our sights on Ukraine. Since the start of the full-scale invasion by Russian troops in 2022, the country's economy has shown resilience. After initially seeing its GDP plummet by almost 30% in that year, growth picked up again in the following years, in spite of constant attacks on its energy infrastructure and high inflation. The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development sees growth hitting 3.3% in 2025. So let's zero in on one sector contributing to growth: defense, which represents just under a third of the country's entire output, and specifically defense tech. The sector expects growth in 2025 of a whopping 218%, according to TechForce in Ukraine, a coalition of businesses that has been lobbying hard, strange as it may seem, for Ukraine to lift its wartime export ban. While the country's own armies may have the most urgent need for weapons, they argue the best way to provide them is to bring in revenues from elsewhere and expand what is already a booming sector. Have a look at this report from our correspondent in Ukraine, Gulliver Craig.
In the air and on the ground, Ukrainian defense tech firms are showing off their latest kit.
Drone Virtus Avid from company Stark Defense.
They all highlight their one unique, if regrettable, advantage over foreign rivals: constant communication with soldiers in real-life war conditions, who give them feedback on their products and say what else is needed. Ukraine is betting on technological innovation to sustain its war effort, but also in the future, its economy.
Ukrainians are in many areas already world leaders in technology. There's a chance for Ukraine to build an industry and offer something that the other nations can make use of.
Helsing was among the first international defense tech firms to open a Kyiv office 2 years ago. But many foreign businesses hesitate to get involved. This forum aims to help Ukrainian defense tech firms forge European connections. Some are looking for joint ventures as a way to boost production. Others already make more drones than Ukraine's military can afford to buy.
It's important to bring in more financing so that companies don't reduce their production capacity but rather expand it. That's why our consortium has been campaigning for Ukraine to allow controlled arms exports. The government has heard us, and we hope to be able to start exporting already this autumn.
These business leaders are not so confident. Parliament recently passed a law to permit some arms exports, but certain provisions were removed at the last minute.
Key amendments that we had asked for disappeared from the bill, which means someone must have removed them. We need to work out who did this and why, and what the law will actually look like in the end.
With a bit more legislative clarity from Kyiv and less EU red tape, the entrepreneurs say, Ukraine could be a major international player.
Well, joining us now on the line from Kyiv is our correspondent Gulliver Craig. Gulliver, your report highlights the real edge that Ukraine has gained in this sector because of battlefield experience and feedback. Give us a sense of just how far ahead of the pack they actually are.
Well, I think Russia and Ukraine have got an edge over all international competitors because they are the two countries that are fighting this intense war. In terms of Ukraine's edge over Russia, my understanding is that it's more at the moment in the domain of the land-based drones, these buggies that can go and blow up somebody's dugout, but also rescue wounded soldiers and bring provisions and armaments to the front line without soldiers having to risk their lives to do it. There, the Ukrainians have got an edge over the Russians. I was shown at that forum that I went to a new airless tyre developed by the company Skylab. They say it's the first of its kind and obviously makes these buggies a lot more resilient because they're going across difficult terrain. In the sea, the Ukrainians pretty much invented the sea drones and scored an astonishing victory over the Russian Black Sea Fleet, neutralizing it for the moment. I wasn't even allowed to film the sea drone that was on display at that forum because they're still very secretive about it and worried that the Russians are going to copy the technology and attempt a comeback there. If we're talking about attack drones in the air, the buzzwords at the moment are swarms in particular, swarms and AI-driven automation. At least two companies are now producing in Ukraine drones where you can fly dozens, if not hundreds of them, with a single pilot, and they can complete the mission on autopilot using artificial intelligence. The targets, everybody stressed to me, having been designated by human operators. They don't select the targets themselves and fire on them. But reading between the lines, I think that the technology would actually allow them to do so. And people are quite cagey about it because obviously this use of AI in Warfor throws up all kinds of difficult, thorny ethical questions that it's very hard to sit down and have a serious discussion about while you're in the middle of fighting a war for your survival. In fact, one developer of these AI technologies for attack drones confided to me that he was quite worried about the idea of exporting them to countries where he himself wouldn't feel so certain that he knew which side was in the right and which side is in the wrong as he does when it's his own country, Ukraine, that's fighting. But on the whole, all of these companies say that they want Ukraine to lift its moratorium on exports because they can see huge amounts of capital flowing in that they could use to fund their research and development and improve their technologies even better. So they see this really as crucial to both, you know, boosting Ukraine's war effort and boosting its technology, its economy.
Well, you mentioned in your report reticence or at least hesitance from some of those foreign businesses that could be interested in dealing with these tech startups in Ukraine and wanting to potentially engage in joint ventures. There are concerns over corruption in Ukraine's defense industry. Tell us more.
Just after that forum, the Kyiv Independent came out with a story alleging that one of the biggest Ukrainian defense tech firms, Firepoint, was under investigation by the country's National Anti-Corruption Bureau, accused of inflating prices, getting preferential treatment from the government. It denied this vociferously, but went to the Kyiv Independent accusing the newspaper of basically working for the Russians, which it seems to me, if there was just a misunderstanding, they could have found a polite way of explaining it. And instead, they were extremely angry about it, all the more so because this is a flagship company that's also been developing Ukraine's first long-range cruise missile called the Flamingo and being billed as a sort of game changer. The corruption investigation, the alleged corruption investigation, doesn't concern the Flamingo anyway, but certainly that only contributed to a general sense of wariness about corruption. But that's not the only thing that puts foreign investors off. Of course, there's also Ukraine's uncertain future and then the risk to the security of production sites. They're making these things in Ukraine. And when you see drones being sent by Russia and rockets to bomb targets in Ukraine, it's safe to assume that some of those targets are defense technology production sites. But the thing is that these things are not very big. They can be made in quite small places. And almost all of the companies have very, very diversified, numerous different production sites. So even if one of them gets hit, it's not necessarily a very big blow to the company as a whole.
Oliver Craig, thank you for adding context to that report. So we'll go even deeper on this now by talking with Katerina Bondar. She's a fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, specializing in AI and defense. She was also an advisor to the Ukrainian government responsible for implementation of reforms in defense. Katerina, thanks for being with us. How much has Ukraine's defense sector changed since you were advising the government? This was before the war. Tech startups have really completely shaken up what used to be quite a centralized, old-school Soviet industry.
Yes, of course. So before the full-scale invasion, Ukrainian military-industrial complex was mostly represented by state-owned enterprises, and they were all aggregated and accumulated under one big state-owned conglomerate called Ukroboronprom. By the way, this company still exists, and it actually improved a lot. It's just highly classified. Its programs are classified, and that's why we don't hear a lot of information about this part of Ukrainian defense industry in the media. And of course, after the full-scale invasion, the wholly new industry, the private industry, was born and exists and keeps existing in parallel with the old Soviet legacy military-industrial complex. And this new defense sector was born, and in fact, it was implementing commercial technology and adapting commercial technology in the beginning to military industries. But what we see right now, it has completely changed. It switched to producing military-grade equipment, and it's not only about drones. They, in fact, produce a lot of military systems such as electronic warfare, new types of sensors, AI-enabled software. And according to different estimates, we see that Ukraine currently has from 800 to 1,000 new companies, which in fact means it's a separate defense industry which exists in parallel of state with the state-owned industry, which was before the full-scale invasion.
I want to talk about the other side of that war now with Russia's defense sector. They're also learning from battlefield experience, as Gulliver explained, and ramping up in huge levels their production. Who's got the technological edge here?
You know, it's really hard to say because everything changes so fast, in fact, daily. But where Russia really excels is not in probably innovation itself, but at scale. And to win this war, you have to be good at scale as well. And this is where I think Russia is way better. So a good example would be well-known Shahed drone. Initially, it was a licensed technology from Iran, but currently it has little or almost nothing to do with that initial technology. Russians has localized production of components. They have established and secured supply chain. They have built a huge production. We saw those propaganda videos, but I think they are pretty real. And they also train their workforce to enable that production. So Russia is really good at picking winners, making champions, and scaling production of those systems. And we see the results on daily attacks on Kyiv and Ukrainian territory. So unfortunately, I think in terms of scale, Russia is excelling. And in terms of innovation, Ukraine is a bit more agile, a bit more creative, innovative. And that's how this race is going on right now.
And finally, tell us more about the links that these Ukrainian tech firms we mentioned are making with EU partners, especially now that talks are ongoing about, you know, security guarantees for Ukraine in the event of those negotiations with the U.S. and of a perhaps unlikely but ceasefire with Moscow.
Yeah, so military-industrial complex and defense industry is one of those security guarantees that can actually deter Russia from proceeding or attacking Ukraine once again in case we have a ceasefire or a peace agreement. And of course, given all those challenges with corruption, with security, with Russian espionage, with doing business climate and environment in Ukraine, I would say one of the options how Ukraine can secure its military production is actually placing the military industry and production facilities on NATO territory, which means in European countries. So it can be done through establishing joint ventures or some sort of collaborations, but it would ensure security, it would ensure compliance with European law, it would give more confidence to investors, and probably this is how it can actually practically integrate Ukraine into European security architecture. So that would be one of the options that I would consider in these negotiations. And and Europeans can actually learn and acquire Ukrainian experience from this war through learning and producing in European countries and working directly with Ukrainians on R&D.
Katerina Bondar, that's unfortunately all the time we have. You are a fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies at Washington. Thank you so much for sharing your insights on France 24.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's all for this week. But as usual, you can always catch up on our previous episodes by checking out the People in Profit page on the France 24 app or on the podcast platform of your choice. In the meantime, thank you for watching and stay tuned.